Buying a chicken sandwich at the drive-up could mean one is supporting a company that promotes traditional family values. And while eating that sandwich may be right or wrong, it does lead us to ask, how do we decide which food is right?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned in to the 1189th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Ensenada who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are, wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, when a press release passed by my desk titled Americans Don't Care About Organic, I just couldn't believe it. And so I thought, what do we care about? Turns out the press release suggested that we care about a lot. In fact, a survey of 2,100 Americans in 25 cities conducted by the folks of Crestline Communications Team suggests that our food ethics have turned us into a nation of guilty eaters. Here are a few of the survey's conclusions. Americans care least about organic labels and most about non-toxic and cruelty-free labels. Over 80% of people would stop supporting their favorite brand if it did something that hurt the environment or was unethical. Americans feel the least guilty about eating meat. And so, having developed an appetite for more, we pause to ask, how do we decide which food is right and which is wrong? Here to help us explore the question, we have Cindy Glover, who is a data analyst with Crestline Communications Team. She's down there in Florida, and they put out the study called American Shopping Guilt. Cindy, welcome to the Food Chain. So pleased to have you.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good. First of all, before we go on, tell us a little bit about the Crestline Communications Team and Crestline itself.
Well, Crestline is a custom promotional products company, and we help businesses create products with their logos on it. And one of the things that increasingly both consumers are more interested in environmentally friendly products. Companies are trying very hard to also live up to that. We are producing a lot of stainless steel straws, reusable shopping bags, mm-hmm. Things that people can feel good about and that can help them. There can be a disconnect sometimes between what we want to do and what practicality and convenience and budget and so forth would have us do. And I think everybody is trying really hard to live their values and to feel good about the role they're playing, but it's not easy. And so that was a part of the idea behind the study.
Mm-hmm. So it's really a way of giving us a glimpse at your reason for being. You're taking care of companies who are trying to do things right, and to do that, it costs an awful lot in both time and effort and money and everything to be correct and to do things right. And if you're going to do things right, you want people to know who you are and hold yourself up, and that's what you do for them, right?
Absolutely.
Well, good. Now, I think all of my radio shows, 1,188 of them, I don't think I've ever done a radio show with a data analyst.
A statistics nerd. I'm pleased to be the first.
Okay, well, welcome aboard. Now, in examining the data from this survey, well, first of all, how did you do the survey?
That's a great question. The short answer would be that the survey was an online survey, and we asked people a lot of questions in quite a bit of depth about their decision-making processes and so forth. We surveyed people in 25 major cities. So part of the challenge was to make sure that we had people in every one of those cities and enough of them for it to be statistically sound. and to make sure that we had a really good representation of ages, gender, income, political leaning, and so forth. So we balanced our people to try to get a picture of what America looks like.
Okay, good. And it's a very interesting picture indeed. Now, as a data analyst, as you sat down to crunch all these numbers, what surprised you most about we the people and how we go about buying our food?
Boy, there are a lot of things that surprised me. I think that one of the things that came through loud and clear is that even though there are more choices than ever, when visitors to this country are often absolutely stunned by a typical American grocery store. And we all notice it. I mean, when you go to buy a product, there are so many different nuances and varieties that you can choose from. And we asked people, is it too much? Do we have too many choices? It is hard work sometimes sifting through the implications of our purchases. And it was surprising to hear quite resoundingly that even though it is a responsibility and even though it is hard work, people are willing to do it. They are glad that they have all of these choices. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't want to go back to fewer.
Right. You know, as a marketing person myself, when I teach classes on marketing, I often say that, you know, all consumers are alike. We're all tired, we're all grumpy, and we're thirsty. And when we walk into the supermarket of life, what we see there for sale for us to drink are probably 500 things or something like that. And so how do we go about making the decision about which one to grab and drink? Well, we look for that which has somehow established a favorable position in our mind. I like this one. I don't like that one. Why? I'm not sure. But is that not part of what you're talking about here? These companies have succeeded in doing things right and have found a way to establish that position in the mind of the marketplace?
I think that is definitely part of it. I think that when consumers stop and evaluate the cereal aisle or the beverages aisle, they want to do it once or twice, reach a conclusion, and then be able to just stick with that for a while. And because you can't fully vet hundreds of choices every time you go to the store. At some point, you figured it out months ago or years ago, and you're happy with it, and you're going to keep going with it. But we do have to reevaluate when we get new information, or when new products come to market, or when new labels give us better insights into what we're putting in our basket.
Well, you have a number of different measurements in your survey. And the big one, I guess, starts out with corporate ethics. And of course, this is all called to mind by the recent expulsion of Chick-fil-A from the San Antonio airport for either its support of traditional family values or its lack of support of LGBT values, one of the two, not sure which one it was booted for. But that being the case, that is exactly what you're talking about. There's a problem here with corporate ethics. Does corporate ethics make a big difference for consumers?
It does. We asked people a few different ways. We asked them how much they agreed with the statement, I care whether the companies I buy from share my moral and ethical values. And we were surprised to see that overall, more than two-thirds of Americans do care, and they want to use their power as consumers to support companies that they believe share their social, political, and environmental values. Only 9.4% of the people we surveyed said they're uninterested and they don't really care.
Wow, only 9.4% did not care?
Only 9.4% did not care.
Huh. So that's...
And we found that age was not really a factor. We looked at, once we had this sort of overview of, okay, most people care, we looked at, does it vary by gender? Does it vary by political leaning? How about generation? How about education? And what we found was that women tend to care a little bit more about corporate ethics than men.
Women care more than men.
By a little bit. Liberals tend to be a little bit more concerned than conservatives, but both liberals and conservatives tend to be more concerned than people who consider themselves moderate, independent, or don't really follow the news that closely. So being politically active tends to make you more concerned. And the more educated consumers were, the more likely they were to care about the social and ethical values of the companies that they buy from. Attending college, even for a short time, made a very big difference.
This is a one that just stopped me in my tracks. Quoting from your survey, spending even a single day on a college campus greatly increases the likelihood that you'll want to influence society through your purchasing decisions.
Indeed. People with just the biggest jump that we saw when we looked at less than high school, some college, graduated college, and so forth. The biggest jump was between high school and some college. And it was statistically significant.
Wow. So it's one of those things that stopped you in your tracks and said, this is interesting. So what is it about college, I guess, that makes you want to change the world by how you buy your food?
That part I couldn't tell you. I can tell you the what the survey found. As to the why, that is, I guess, beyond
that's
the scope.
That's up for conjecture, right? That's up for
absolutely.
That's up for a couple of beers on the back porch.
Or a good dinner table brawl.
There you go. Well, the interesting thing about this is that, indeed, corporate ethics seem to play a significant role in how people go about buying things, especially food. And if you develop a reputation for doing things wrong, then you're going to be in big trouble.
Indeed.
And so it I guess what you have to do is figure out how to fight for that position that we are a good company and that we do things right.
And I think that one of the things that we found is there are so many issues. There is so much news, 24/7 news cycle. First, one day coffee is good for you, one day coffee is bad for you. There's a lot of conflicting information, and people do struggle to sift through it, and you can't care about everything.
Or you burn out pretty fast, right? So you have
to
select what you care about and make that part of your living decisions then.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, folks, good. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, with Cindy Glover, who is a data analyst with Crestline Communications Team and the Crestline Company. And the subject of the today's program is their survey, American Shopping Guilt. We're guilty people. How did we decide which food is right and which is wrong? We will be right back. Please do stay tuned with the Food Chain Radio Program.
now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, here we are, trying to figure out how we go about deciding which food is right and which is wrong. How we perceive of those people who sell us things appears to be a significant factor in our making our purchasing decisions. Whether we think these companies are good or bad. And we judge them on all kinds of different levels, including the levels of whether they're doing things right or ethically correct. Now, how do you measure ethics, Cindy Glover?
How do we measure ethics? I don't know that you can. I think that one of the things that we look at is where does the rubber meet the road? What do people care about, and then what do they do about it? And it's very easy to say, I care about the environment, I care about healthy food, I would rather not have pesticides and chemicals in my food. It's quite another thing when you're in the grocery store and you're hungry and time is short and budgets are what they are, and there's a lot of convenient stuff in front of you. So we didn't really set out to try to understand what ethics are, but really, how do they guide people's choices? How do they guide the actions that consumers take? And really, you know, we asked consumers straight up, what matters most to you when you have to make those choices, and you can't care about everything. And you really do need to prioritize, because we all live with budgets. What do you reach for, and which labels resonate?
So I suppose just how you come to think about something, it makes a difference. And, you know, continuing to use the Chick-fil-A example, if you are a person of, you know, that supports traditional values, I would suspect you would look at Chick-fil-A and think that they're a good company. But if you are a person that does not, that supports the LGBTQ community, you might look at Chick-fil-A and think they're not a good company. And thus we have that divide in the United States over that Chick-fil-A company.
And there are some people who just say, this chicken tastes better than that chicken, and I'm in the mood for a chicken sandwich.
That would make the third party then, right?
Possible. There are a lot of things that have been politicized, and there are some companies that have chosen to take stands on issues, and some companies that have tried very hard not to. There are some consumers who rebel and say, I want to keep my politics and my chicken sandwich separate. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think, the question that we were interested in, which was, where does this intersection happen between voting with our money and our purchasing decisions, and the responsibility that goes along with that, and the burden of paying attention to the news and trying to keep up with which companies do or don't align with your own values? Because it's not just Chick-fil-A, it's Nike, it's Hobby Lobby, it's Gillette with a controversial ad that they came out with. Mm-hmm. There are several companies that have made part of their business model and part of their brand endorsing, you know, core values that Americans may be divided about.
And in doing so, kind of pissing off half the customers, but making the other half maybe perhaps a little bit more loyal.
Ultimately, all of them will decide, I think, with their quarterly profits, you know, whether certain risks pay off. We were looking at it from the standpoint of the consumer and really empathizing with the fact that today it can be hard if you are a consumer and you do care and you want to do the right thing, but you also don't have unlimited time, unlimited money, or unlimited bandwidth to follow the news, how do you juggle that? Where do you cut corners? You know, we all do it. We all make those guilty purchases and feel a little bit bad.
We have to, too, because when we walk into the supermarket of life, there's 500 things to drink. And which one do we drink? You know, we just have to have that, some kind of brand loyalty tucked away there. Well, you have a number of different ways in which you measure right and wrong. One of them was age, and you said that age does not seem to make a difference.
It was not statistically significant. We thought that perhaps baby boomers or millennials would be very far apart, and Generation Z, and everybody is consuming the same media and facing the same struggle.
Mm-hmm. So there we are. Did not seem to make, but how about geography? You surveyed 25 different cities. What did you find?
We did indeed. We found that where you live does have, it can predict how strongly you care about whether the companies that you're buying from share your moral and ethical values. People in Seattle and New York City and Washington, D.C. care the most, followed by Charlotte, Miami, and Detroit. At the other end of the spectrum, people in New Orleans and Boston were least concerned, followed by Pittsburgh and Atlanta. And they were more likely to say a sandwich is a sandwich, and I like chicken.
There you go. And then issues make a big difference, do they not?
They definitely do, and there were some surprises.
Okay, let's start with the issues. Because the thing, of course, that struck my attention most was the fact that of all of the items on the list, organic is the last one.
Indeed. That was a big surprise that organic, of all of the labels that we see on food today, whether it's free range or antibiotic and hormone free or non-GMO, Made in America, fair trade, of all of the different identifiers that companies can put on products to signal something about the sourcing of it or the way it was made, organic was the one that had the least power over consumers. They, in terms of priorities, it was dead last.
Now, and you had no feedback as to why they listed it that way.
We can only guess. There have certainly been news stories that said that the organic label isn't terribly well enforced, and particularly when produce is imported from other countries, we're sort of counting on the enforcement mechanisms elsewhere, and consumers may question how organic actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that would be pure speculation.
And of course, there would be the dilution of the organic label by the recent inclusion of hydroponics in the label too. So, a couple of reasons there why organics might be dead last. But holy smokes, dead last! Up at the top of the list, non-toxic.
That was really important to consumers. Far and away, the single most important label that they look for when they're in the store making choices.
Now, what does that mean? I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen a label that said non-toxic.
Are you a parent with young children?
Well, no, not young children anymore, but...
Sorry to get personal. I think that there's definitely, for non-toxic, that's definitely something very common on crayons and shampoos, things that young kids are likely to put in their mouth, at least in my world. That's where I'm most likely to see that. But I also, you also might notice it on cleaning products. People who have pets might be, concerned about shampoos and so forth.
Sure. It's just not poison. But I always thought that kind of like organic did that for food, but apparently people don't trust that for food at all. Number two on the list, very interestingly enough, cruelty-free.
Indeed. I think that products that are not tested on animals or where animals are treated well, I think that is something that Americans feel very strongly about. And it came through loud and clear that anytime there's a choice, people are willing to pay more and they will seek out the products that are cruelty-free and are not tested on animals. And I think that there have been a lot of public campaigns and media campaigns to draw attention to some of the conditions mm-hmm. that animals are sometimes exposed to. And that has hit people. It has made an impact and moved the needle.
And that would explain why free range and cage-free show up high on the list as well then. Another
Indeed.
One that was significant was locally sourced and locally owned. People like to buy local.
They do. They do indeed. And I think that that's also the result of education efforts. That the farther food is trucked, the more of an environmental impact that can have.
Mm-hmm. And then Made in America and Fair Trade are pretty big, but they're far down the list. And then next to the last, non-GMO. Now, given Indeed. All of the fuss over GMOs in recent years, I would have thought that would have come higher than second to the last, but not.
I think that perhaps, and again, this would be speculation, but it did rank very low. And in digging a little bit, there have been a lot of scientists who have come out on the record saying that GMOs are safe. The American Medical Association, the World Health Organization, the National Academy of Sciences. I think that GMOs, when they were first introduced to the public at large, these were frankenfoods, these were scary, unfamiliar. And as the medical community has weighed in and people have not seen the sky fall, what we can only guess that public information campaigns touting their safety have reassured people somewhat, because of all of the things that consumers care about and worry about, GMOs were pretty low down.
Mm-hmm. And then organic, which is the great puzzler to me, because it seemed to be the one word that kind of at one time embodied almost all of the above. You know, when you thought of organic food, you thought of non-toxic because it's pesticide and whatnot, poison-free, and you associated it with cruelty-free and antibiotic-free and no artificial. You associated it with all of those things that people are definitely took issue with, but not so. And it just seems like that for some reason the word organic has fallen to the bottom of the list, and that's that.
And there's always the possibility that with more rigid enforcement, if people feel like the word has meaning and that there is actually regulation behind it, it could rise again. Things are always in a state of flux, mm-hmm. but it has become a catch-all, and apparently it's a catch-all that Americans don't put a lot of stock in. They may not trust it.
Very
or they may not think it's worth the extra cost.
Now, for somebody who is especially tuned into brands, as you are, and analyzing data, as you are, wondering, you know, when you lose a meaning of a word like organic, just how difficult is it to get it back? You know, I'm thinking of when Coca-Cola came out with New Coke, it found itself in a hell of a pickle because, you know, it really confused the meaning of its brand and what it had to do to regain that footing or that meaning for the brand. Do you have any thoughts with respect to that?
Boy, I'm going to get myself in trouble here. but I think that sometimes when a word is lost, it's replaced with something else. I know that rebranding was very successful for Comcast and Xfinity. One incarnation that had a lot of negative associations, and one has fairly positive feedback. Mm-hmm. And so either, it comes back because it is more rigidly defined and companies can't use it unless they meet a standard that the public has faith and trust in, or something that is more meaningful and more specific takes its place, mm-hmm. whatever that might be.
And that would explain why we see groups of people, of small farmers and whatnot, searching for a new word for organic, because they probably sense that they have indeed lost a lot of that meaning. We have a short break coming up, but when we come back, I'd like to get into the politics of our decision making, because that seems to have a pretty big influence on just about everything. We are conservatives and we are liberals and we are somewhere in between. But as we move along, we, especially going into another presidential election cycle, we seem to be more and more and more polarized as to whether which side we're on. We're on one side or we're on the other side. And if you're in the middle, you're probably going to be roadkill coming into this presidential cycle. So how do we use our politics to make decisions about the food that we buy? We are with Cindy Glover, who is a data analyst and spokesperson for the Crestline Custom Promotion Products Company. They, of course, make products for people who want to maintain a good position in the mind of the marketplace. Right back. Stay tuned.
Hi, folks. How many of you out there love to garden? Wouldn't it be nice to grow some of your own food? Or maybe a flower garden would brighten your day. Well, now you can have the pleasures of gardening without all that effort. You don't need a tractor. You don't need a rototiller. All you need is the Knox Garden Box, a heavily constructed, portable, elevated garden on legs that can virtually change the way you've gardened in the past. The Knox Garden Box can be set up anywhere. Yes, you can place it right on concrete. For those with bad backs, you've got critters and gophers, no space or maybe no dirt. With the Knox Garden Box, the therapy of garden is now the prescription for good mental health. The way to find your fabulous Knox Garden Box is by logging on to knoxgardenbox.com. That's K-N-O-X, gardenbox.com. Or by calling 831-461-9430.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org. The food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org. Farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place aboard the USS Dale at Guam, 15 August 1945.
When word came through that the war had ended, everyone went wild. We made noise with whatever we could get our hands on. Sirens shrieked, bells rang, horns bellowed, sailors whooped and hollered. I was the wildest of all because when I first went in the Navy, I read you had to do everything you could to keep your head and nerves together so you could survive to the end. Well, I held myself together almost 4 years aboard that tin can, and I made it through to the end. Yes, I celebrated. I whooped and I hollered and I banged on metal. You bet I did. And I celebrated a bunch for all those guys that couldn't, too.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, we are conservative, we are liberal, or we are somewhere in between, and that's going to make an impact on how we decide what foods to buy and what other products to buy as well. And who would know better how that shakes out than Cindy Glover, who is a data analyst with the Crestline Custom Promotion Products and their market survey called American Shopping Guilt. Are we guilty? It seems like that's exactly what your survey points out. We're guilty.
Well, Michael, we feel guilty. We're not passing judgment on anybody, but Americans do fret and we worry and we make choices, and sometimes we are proud of those choices and we feel really good about it, and sometimes we cut corners or put convenience, you know, value ahead of our values, and we feel pretty lousy about it. And there's an emotional component to these choices that we make every day. And although proper formal elections only happen every 2 to 4 years, anybody with a wallet and a family to feed or, you know, a car to put gas in is voting every day with their purchases.
You know, I think you're exactly right. And I'm just thinking about myself. As I'm going through day-to-day life, and I get hungry, and I said, well, I'm going to buy that and eat it. And I do, and I eat it, and I know I'm not supposed to because of one reason or another, but I eat it, and then I go away, and I feel guilty. And I just said, why am I feeling guilty? Because you know it's not the right thing to buy and eat. But I did it anyway, and now I feel guilty. And it seems like there's a lot of us that do, at least according to your survey, 2,100 people in 25 different cities? Wow. One of the things that we judge ourselves by is our politics, of course, whether we're conservative, whether we're liberal. So let's pick up that measurement and look at some of the things that we go for. Organic. Although the averages were nearly identical, 19% of conservatives consider buying organic foods extremely important. Only 12.9% of liberals feel the same way. By golly, I would have thought it would have been the other way around.
That was a puzzler. The same thing with GMOs. We looked at overall numbers, but then we also took a look at the each end of the bell curve, and people who said this is extremely important to me, and for buying organic, although the averages were nearly identical, when we looked at people who say this is extremely important, 19% of conservatives considered buying organic food extremely important. About 13% of liberals did, and that was significant. And for non-GMO, conservatives were much more concerned about genetically modified ingredients than liberals. There were almost double the number of conservatives.
Yeah.
Nearly 27% called it extremely important to choose non-GMO goods, whereas 16% of liberals said it was extremely important. And at the other end, one in four liberals said non-GMO was not important at all, and that number was quite a bit lower for conservatives. So, again, the averages are the same, but the extremes are a little different.
Wow. Yeah, that one stumped me entirely. I would have expected it to be just exactly the opposite, but not at all true. Made in America.
That one was absolutely, hands down, much, much more important to conservatives than to liberals. There was a very, very significant difference, and it makes sense that that is an issue that has been politicized and
Make America great again, right?
Absolutely.
So you have that positioning. I guess that would make conservatives pay a little more closely. And probably works the other way, too, if you're a liberal and you would see...
Fair trade was more important.
Ah.
On the flip side, the idea that we are paying people in other countries fair wages for their products and they're being... they're working under humane conditions and there's some reciprocity, that was much more important to liberals than to conservatives.
Mm-hmm. The whole notion of fairness. So here you have two issues that really point out the politics of where we are. If it says made in America, you know, you one equates that in one's mind with make America great again. And on the flip side, if you're a liberal, you probably think, it's them darn Republicans who are making America great again. So made in America maybe does not mean what it should mean to me. To heck with that. But when it comes to fair trade and treating people fairly, that is the flag of the liberal community, and that's what they hold up, and it's very important to them. No artificial ingredients.
Although there are differences in what value, you know, what labels mattered depending on how you vote when you step into the voting booth, there are a lot of things where it's not political. It's and there isn't a difference. And liberals and conservatives don't really part ways on non-toxic. They're on the same page when it comes to locally sourced. And that no artificial ingredients is, although the conservatives are more likely to consider it extremely important. The averages are pretty close for both parties.
So it's very interesting then, when it comes to toxic materials, we're pretty close together, liberals and conservatives. But the big split then is in make America great again notions or fairness for all. So anything that resolves around those two themes shows our political split and where we're at.
And perhaps also trust in science.
Really?
When you look at the non-GMO and no artificial ingredients and those extremes where people are extremely concerned about it. And of course that is a minority. But the overall results would suggest that liberals are perhaps slightly more likely to think that science makes things better, and helps us. And, there might be a little bit more suspicion of things concocted in laboratories if you are conservative. Hypothetically, you know, I'm looking at it and you know, at the patterns and so forth.
Well, you're a data analyst, and that's what you do, right? You look for those patterns.
I can see the pattern. I can't necessarily tell you why.
Right.
But, you know, when you hear about artificial ingredients, you assume that there are flavors or there are things that are being created in a laboratory, and how you feel about, you know, scientists and laboratories could influence whether you're alarmed by that in your food or not.
Mm-hmm. So, and then with respect to politics and cruelty-free and cage-free, that's got to be a liberal position.
It is, but not by as much as you would think. That was very important to both people who, on the right and on the left, a little bit more, you know, greater concern to people on the left. But there are many conservative animal lovers who like the idea of cows chewing on grass in fields rather than lined up, you know, side to side in metal cages.
Yeah, and there you go. And then one of your categories really caught my attention, and that is guilt, because that seems to be what we all look like after having taken this survey and crunched the numbers. We all look pretty guilty in our purchasing decisions. We're using guilt to manage our decisions. So you asked a question, what are we most guilty about? And there are a number of things. And the first one was?
Leave the light on in an empty room. We seem to have echoes of parents or grandparents saying, did you leave the light on? Did you turn off the light? And that one, surprisingly, was the biggest thing that we cringe a little and feel bad about if we do.
And amazing, if you think about it. Oh, it's just a light, no big deal. And yet that's the one that really gets us feeling guilty. So we leave the light on, we sit in the bedroom, we go sit down in the living room, watch TV, and we're sitting there feeling guilty. Probably don't even know why, too, right?
Hard to say. It was very, very close. It was right up there with throwing something recyclable in the trash. We've all been in a parking lot and you have a plastic bottle in your hand or a can, and there's a trash bin right in front of you and no recycling bin anywhere to be seen. And the big dilemma, do you throw the thing that you know is recyclable in the trash can that is right there, or do you hold on to it until you get home and put it in your blue or yellow bin and feel better about it? And we feel pretty bad if we go for the convenient toss it, you know, trash the recyclable thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, all of these issues bring up the point that we have been well trained by our upbringing, haven't we?
Upbringings and schools, the reduce, reuse, recycle posters, and Earth Day, and all of that, which is a mixed blessing.
So the other one, of course, that caught my attention is that one of the things we are most guilty about is buying from companies that support political causes with which I disagree. Now, having been in the news talk radio business for a number of years, I know we in the news talk industry often get clobbered by people who have opposing viewpoints. And I suspect that they don't like us for that reason, so they don't support us for that reason. It's a big deal on your list, is it not? Buying from companies that support political causes with which I disagree?
It is. And it's that value versus your values dilemma again. There are times when you're hungry and there's a fast food restaurant near you,
right?
And depending on your political views, you might feel good or bad about buying food there, or there's a particular brand of shoes that fits you really well, but you don't like the endorsements that they've been doing recently, and they've waded into political views, and you have a problem with that. And then consumers have to make a choice. And do they buy the product based on the product's merits and the things that they like about it, or do they inconvenience themselves, go elsewhere, buy from another brand because of their political or moral or ethical views? And when people do buy from a company that they know for a fact has taken a stand with which they disagree, they feel bad about it. They feel conflicted.
Right. And, you know, I guess I go through that when I get hooked by a hot dog vendor on the street corner. Did I really buy that hot dog and eat it down? It tasted so good. And yet you kind of feel guilty. Well, then, what do people do about managing their guilt? What are the things that they do that allows them to take charge a little bit?
Well, I think that Americans have learned and they understand that we vote with our money, and that when we stop buying certain things, companies respond and adapt accordingly. It has gotten easier to find gluten-free products, to find recycling bins, and to find paper straws and things like that. So I think that when people go ahead and buy the thing that they don't feel good about, they carry some guilt. But most of the time, they try to shop their values and vote with their pocketbooks understanding that in a capitalist economy, companies that notice a decline or notice a shift will usually recalibrate and respond. And so trying to do the right thing and not beating ourselves up too much when we don't, yeah, I think is the key.
Well, you being a mother, how has your analyzing this data impacted you, or has it?
I'm not sure that, I think I have better insight into the choices that I make and why I make them, mm-hmm, and the trade-offs. My son has Down syndrome and autism and only drinks through a straw. I feel a little bit guilty about using plastic straws, but it is more important for him to be able to drink.
Amen.
So we've tried some paper ones. He wasn't willing to accept it. So I think you fight your battles and you make your choices, and then you try not to beat yourself up too badly.
There you go. Well, Cindy Glover, thank you so much for joining us today on the Food Chain Radio program. Cindy of Crestline Custom Promotion Products. What a wonderful conversation we've had over why we buy what we buy. Thank you so much for joining us. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.